Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's guest is Dr. Martin McClellan, Commissioner of Food and Drugs. And joining us in our conversation is Therese Moore. Well, Mark, the FDA has been mandated to play a role in Homeland Security, and you mentioned it at the top of the show. Could you tell us more about this, and especially as it relates to food and drugs?
Well, it's nothing new that the FDA has a major role in protecting the foods that Americans eat. For a long time, our mission has focused on food safety. How can we use the best sciences to reduce the risks of what can go wrong in food preparation and manufacturing and the like that could create illnesses, that could introduce toxic agents, that could otherwise adversely affect the health of Americans. Now, in light of recent developments in terrorism, we have to think about what might be deliberately done to our food supply to cause injury to Americans. And I'm sure some of your listeners have heard about reports of terror cells in Europe that were working on developing ricin and other threats related to agents like anthrax and the like that can be used in foods. So we have responded to this new challenge, which is a top priority of Secretary Thompson's as well, by substantially expanding our work in the food security area. In fact, regulations that we're implementing this year along with increased staffing, both of which resulted from legislation passed by Congress on bioterrorism last year, will amount to the biggest expansion in our food safety and security resources in at least 20 or 30 years. We are trying to implement this effectively. This is requiring a lot of new thinking, and we are at the forefront of the administration's thinking about food security strategy. How can we get the most protection for the public against the new threats of terrorism? We're trying to do it in a way that's as least disruptive as possible on trade with other countries. We're importing more foods than ever before, and on production in this country, not to impose any unnecessary costs or restrictions on the kinds of foods that people can get. There are a lot of difficult questions here, but I think the good news is that if we do this right, we can not only protect the food supply against threats to our security, but also improve the level of food safety at the same time. We're doing this through such steps as developing ways of tracking back outbreaks of foodborne illness more quickly. We're doing it by increasing our inspections, especially at the border, but also involving food manufacturers in this country. And we're doing it through other steps to enable us to respond very quickly in the event of a foodborne outbreak, and especially one that might be deliberately introduced.
One of the largest challenges facing the FDA is its drug approval process. How is the FDA dealing with this challenge?
This is an important challenge, and it really, I think, couldn't be happening. It's an important issue, especially today, because of what's going on in the area of biomedical research. Today, we recently sequenced the human genome in its entirety. There are new sciences being formed in genomics and proteomics that potentially give us the ability to understand why a disease is occurring in a particular individual and have a very targeted, individualized set of therapies that can work effectively for that patient to prevent or hold back the disease. These are new kinds of ways of providing medical technologies, though, that haven't come along in the past. And it's our challenge, especially at FDA, to help make sure that we can translate these new insights in the biomedical sciences into safe and effective products for patients. Right now, the level of spending in biomedical research and development is at the highest level ever, by far. The NIH has just completed a doubling of its budget to over $27 billion. A lot of people don't realize that there's even more private R&D spending going on now. The R&D spending by the pharmaceutical companies has doubled over the last 8 years. It's now over $50 billion worldwide, over $20 billion in R&D investment by biotech companies, and more R&D investment by device manufacturers than ever before. Yet, in the past year, in 2002, we saw the lowest number of truly new drugs coming into our agency in more than a decade. And there's a disconnect there. There is a tremendous amount of work going on in product development, but it's not yet showing up in safe and effective treatments for patients. And so a lot of our work is focusing not only on how can we reduce our review times while still assuring the safety and effectiveness of the products that we approve, but also on how can we use the knowledge that we have about what it takes to get a safe and effective product approved to make this development pathway go more quickly and smoothly. It costs over $800 million to develop a new drug today, and the success rates are extremely low. Even drugs that make it into advanced clinical trials, the so-called phase 3 trials that are very costly, result in applications to us less than half the time. That's a very long and a very costly and a very uncertain process, and we need to do something about that. If we can find ways to bring down the cost and bring down the uncertainty of product development, it not only will help patients, it will also help address the real challenges that we're facing in healthcare financing today.
So I guess if I can summarize, a major challenge seems to be between speed, quality, and cost. And the goal is to maximize speed, maximize quality, and decrease cost. Is
that safe to say? A lot of people view the approval process as one that has to have trade-offs. Well, you can either do it more quickly, and that means that you know less about the products coming on the market. They might be potentially unsafe, or you can do it longer, have more extensive testing, and be more confident in safety and effectiveness. But because of the delays, that means many patients might not receive potentially life-saving treatments. I don't think it has to be an either-or, and there's several reasons for that. One is that last year Congress passed new legislation, a reauthorization of our so-called prescription drug user fee program that gives us more resources to apply to each review that we do. That enables us to bring more manpower, more expertise in a more timely way to the product review process. In addition, we've been working hard to find ways to reduce the time to determine that a drug is safe and effective without changing our standards at all. And I want to emphasize that. The FDA has the world's gold standards for product approvals, and we have the Americans can and should have confidence that the products that we approve are safe and effective. But there are ways to find faster mechanisms for doing that. For example, we found a lot of cases where it took more than one so-called review cycle for a product to get approved. An application came in to us, we found some problems, we sent it back to the product developer, they had to do some further work, come in again, and only at that point or later was the product actually approved. We're doing a root cause analysis of why those problems happened to see if we can avoid them in some cases. And one of the things that we found is that in at least some cases, if we can communicate early and clearly with product developers about what's needed to get a product approved, it can avoid those repeat cycles. And that reduces product development time and it reduces cost of product development without changing our standards at all. We're also implementing new guidances through a collaborative process with outside experts to be clearer about what the roadmap is and what the goalposts are for developing a new treatment in emerging areas of technology like combination drugs and devices and cell and gene therapy and pharmacogenomics. And we're especially focusing on areas like obesity treatments, diabetes treatments, and cancer treatments where our reviewers and our experts think there are a lot of potentially valuable treatments in the pipeline that are being formed or being developed using new technologies. And we want to be very clear about what it takes to get those new technologies approved. So that's a way of reducing costs and reducing uncertainty in product development while still maintaining our very high standards. It's not either or.
The responsibilities of the FDA do not end with the approval of the drug. The FDA continues to monitor the adverse impact of drugs once they're approved. How is the FDA planning to speed up the detection of adverse impact of drugs?
Therese, we're doing a lot of things in that area as well. For all that we do to determine that a drug's safe and effective before it's approved, when a treatment gets out into the real world in patients that may have combinations of conditions that or combinations of medications or the drugs being used on conditions of use that are just very hard to detect in any feasible clinical trial, new problems can be discovered, and we want to be able to find those quickly. We've started a new program at FDA with resources from that legislation passed last year, about $20 million per year or more, that enables us to enhance our post-market monitoring activities. Earlier this year, we proposed a new regulation to enhance the reporting that comes into us from companies about adverse events. We did this in an international collaboration. The goal is to have one high-quality report on any significant adverse event or potential adverse event that involves a drug or a biologic that we regulate worldwide, rather than lots of different reports going to different regulatory agencies in a less timely fashion. But I think the way for the future is not to depend just on our mandatory reporting systems with manufacturers. Good as those are, they're only as good as the reporting of increasingly harried health professionals getting those adverse event reports into us. And according to the statistics I've seen, even in the best systems, we're only getting about 10% to 15% of all the adverse events that actually occur. With modern medical technology and health information systems, I think it's possible to get in real time or close to it automatic reports when an adverse event happens involving a product that we regulate. We've started implementing programs to do this on a pilot basis. For example, we're collaborating with New York Presbyterian Hospital to work out the kinks in sending in information electronically about particular drugs and side effects that we're worried about, where we think there might be a problem. We started a pilot program that involves now several hundred hospitals and healthcare organizations in our devices center that gives us information electronically over the internet about potential problems involving the devices that we regulate. And we intend for this to be a two-way street. We'll get the information in more quickly and reliably, and we can sift through it using data mining and other techniques to find potential problems, act on them more quickly, and send that information back out electronically. It's a much better way, I think, for the future to automatically and reliably and accurately detect problems with the products that we regulate and respond to those problems effectively.
Interesting. What does e-government mean in the context of the FDA? We'll ask Dr. Mark McClellan of the FDA to give us his perspective when the Business of Government Hour returns.